Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
KL7R, KL7R, in Alaska, this is M0HBR. In England, are you there, Mike?
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R, Juno, good to hear your voice again this evening, Bill. We had 2 days in a row of sunshine, and my back is feeling the pain of sunshine warrior malady there, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
Okay, Mike, yeah, it's looking at the watch here. Let's see, it's Saturday, September 16th, 2006, 0617 Greenwich Mean Time. Saturday morning in London. I guess it's Friday night in Juneau. Well, glad to hear about the good weather, and sorry to hear about the resulting back pain. It's an indication that you need to be spending more time in front of the workbench and less time out in the yard, Mike. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, that's what happens, you know. It's sort of like the summer up here. The days are kind of long. You usually wind up taking a nap around noon just so you can make 2 days out of each one. And when it's sort of like that when it rains. It's been raining all summer here, and so a couple of nice sunny days, you want to get out and get those vitamin D load from looking at the sun there. Anyway, enough of that. Well, I have been doing some work, although it's been chaotic. I'll have to just kind of like free form it. I don't have anything laid out. I have been doing some soldering. I currently have an FT101E, an old Yaesu hybrid tube and transistor rig I'm trying to restore for a friend of mine on the bench. And have done some soldering, mostly trying to make some of my test equipment a little more solid. What you been up to, Bill? Over.
Okay, Mike, yeah. Well, yeah, we'll take advantage of that sunshine while you can because, as you know, the end is near. You're further north than I am. But we're already starting to sense the approaching darkness. I have to look on the bright side. As an amateur astronomer, I'm pleased that soon I'm going to be able to take the telescope out. Kind of tough to do that in the June-July time period here in London, but... Well, soon we'll be out into backyard or sidewalk astronomy here in London again. I have not been generating much solder smoke lately. I'm ashamed to admit. As a matter of fact, I looked around the shack this morning and kind of forlornly said that this is sort of a solder smoke free zone. I've got to get back into business and start generating some solder smoke. I'm thinking about projects that I'd like to cook up, and well, one of these days we'll get going, and hopefully in a future solder smoke episode I'll have something substantive to report. But I'm glad to hear you have been picking up the slack. The FT101 project sounds interesting. I love those old rigs; they were great. They're not quite in the genuine old radio boat anchor category, because of course they're not American-made, so they're not in there with the heat kits or anything like that. But they're borderline. They're getting there. They're old enough, and they're hybrid. And I remember them being with enough discrete components in there so you could actually work on them. Now, I've never played with one, but I've been tempted. And I guess there's a lot of them are probably on the market now. So, yeah, well, what's happening with that? And tell us, fill the solder smoke gap, Mike. Tell us about that project and what else is cooking there at KL7R. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, one of the hams in town, one of the old timers, passed on about 3 or 4 years ago, and his family's just getting ready to sell his stuff on eBay. So they asked if I'd go through it, and he had two FT101s and a Kenwood 430 and a Kenwood 520, and they want me to kind of go through them and look at them. And the first FT-101 they had didn't work. it lit up, but it didn't work. And enough tuner cleaner and some wiggling of knobs and some tuning of pots, and I got that one working. This one here was missing a power cable, and so I stole it from the other one, and pieces of it work. Tuner cleaner didn't fix this one, so I'm going through and fiddling. I've been learning a little bit about it. Yeah, it's kind of got that feel of like a Heathkit HW101, a hybrid half transistor, half, you know, the PA and drivers are tubes, and it's got a real nice receiver, and the speech processor on the thing is amazing. You get 100 watts out CW, and if you're not careful, you can get 100 watts out voice. You can make your voice turn into CW there. Square wave everything up. So I've been doing that. I bought from his estate an MFJ antenna analyzer and a 12-volt power supply. And got the antenna analyzer home, and pieces of it were blown up too. So I got some of my money back on that one, and so that'll give me an opportunity to dive into that MFJ antenna analyzer. The frequency counter on it works. The signal generator on it works. I believe the impedance dial on it works, but the SWR dial doesn't. So I think he must have transmitted into it, and well, that'll give me an opportunity to dive into that. I didn't want to tear it up if it was going to be full price, but if it was cheap, I was willing to tear it up. So that's on the bench. One other thing I did is I kind of made a decision to go to RC Ajax instead of BNC on my one-off boards. I'm running out of BNC connectors there, Bill. I'm through HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, wow. Exciting stuff. Yeah, you mentioned the HW101 and the hybrid rigs. Well, you know, I have an HW101 here, and I have a real sentimental attachment to it. I think I probably mentioned it a few times. It's not on the air. I think these the HW101s, I don't think they age well. I think the FT101s probably do better in that regard. But the HW101, you know, it was always billed as the sort of the poor man's Collins. I think they cut a lot of corners to keep the price down. A lot of the resistors in there, I think, should have probably been half watt or bigger, and they were quarter watt or smaller. And so there's all kinds of problems, and also the plastic and stuff on the HW101. It gets brittle and breaks. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show, but I actually one time had to get this, replace the clutch on an HW101. There's a dial clutch device in there that allows you to make sure that the dial is correctly lined up with the frequency of the VFO. And there's this little button on the front. You press the thing in, and it holds down this clutch mechanism that allows you to turn the tuning cap without moving the dial. And you line it up so you've got the dial calibrated with the actual frequency of the VFO. And I was doing it one day, and I heard this ominous kind of plastic crack sound from inside the rig, and I opened it up, and sure enough, over the years, the bit of plastic in there that was the clutch had gone brittle, and when I hit the button, it just cracked and popped it all over into four or five pieces. So I had to go out and find a bit of plastic stock of similar material and go in there and change the clutch. I also had to oil this thing every once in a while. I had to oil my HW101. You know, you had to put drops of oil around the main tuning capacitor, or the tuning would get really squirrely. So, man, that was a rig where you had to change the oil and change the clutch. I think the FT101 probably doesn't have any problems of that nature. Well, hey, the MFJ antenna analyzer. Wow, a test bench in a box. I'm jealous. Fix that thing up. That is a real find, and if you can get that thing going, you've got lots of test gear, lots of articles written about how to use this thing, all kinds of different applications. So that's a good one, Mike. KL7R M0HBR.
Well, I originally offered $100 for it, and they're normally, you know, around $270 or something. But They gave me some money back. I wisely ate all the money they gave back. I took my kid out to dinner and had breakfast, and that was about that was what was left of the $100. So anyway, I'll make a stab at repairing that. And if not, I have a sick gen and a frequency counter, so that's probably worth what I got in it. Let's see. I know I sent you a couple notes. Yeah, maybe you can remember. I feel like a bit scattered here. I did learn a good rule of thumb. You know the one rule of thumb that says the dielectric constant of air is 10,000 volts per centimeter. So if you see an arc 2 centimeters long, you know that was a 200,000 or a 20,000 volt arc. I've got another rule of thumb there, Bill. Over.
Tell us. Our thumbs are waiting, Mike. Go ahead.
This one, this is getting back to QRSS again. I unsubscribed from the Knights QRSS mailing list, but I had also subscribed to a Yahoo QRSS group, which was lower volume, and a note came through, and a guy was working on an H mode mixer. I can just regurgitate the phrase. I don't really know what it is. It's some sort of a digital mixer. But they were talking about third order intercepts, and that's a figure of merit for how much distortion you get at levels of adjacent signal. And the rule of thumb is that third order intercept is 10 to 15 dB above the 1 dB compression point. And a 1 dB compression point is pretty easy to measure, and I've seen that, and I found a site out there that guided statistics, and it turns out to be a pretty valid rule of thumb. And many circuits, the guys that make the SBL1 mixers and stuff, they use that that measurement, the 1 dB compression point, as an easy number to get. Anyway, I thought I'd pass that on there, Bill.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I third order intercept is I know what it is, and I've studied it and played it, but then I get away from it for a while, and I lose it. You know what I'm saying? I hope one day, as I get more sophisticated in my home brewing and testing and analysis of my mixer circuits, that I'm doing more rigorous analysis of third order intercept, But for now, I think I'm more at the stage where I try to listen to my own signal and see if it sounds like it's distorting. Sometimes I'll put it on the scope and see if I can see any obvious signs of distortion. Also, another trick is, you know, if I'm really rough measure if the thing is distorting too badly, is if I watch the SWR meter. This is a trick that I use. I'm sure you and others do the same thing, but. You know, I tune up the antenna with my HW8, which puts out a very clean signal. And if I get the SWR down to 1:1, and then I fire up whatever homebrew rig I'm working on more or less the same frequency, and I watch the SWR there. And if suddenly with the homebrew rig, the SWR is wildly out of line, I know that there is something coming out of that rig on a frequency other than what the HW8 was doing. So sort of a real quick and dirty spectrum analyzer. But Mike, you could tell I'm a long way from analyzing third order intercepts. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, and that's something I was thinking about doing a high level mixer. You know, I said, well, you know, an SBL1 is basically two transformers and four diodes, and I said, well, all I got to do is get bigger transformers and bigger diodes, and you know, it may not be that simple. It may be that that if I used 2-watt diodes and 10-watt toroids, that I'd hit gain compression long before I was able to do a high level mix at 5 watts. That's something I still got to fiddle with one of these years. But yeah, the third order intercept is a receiver figure of merit. I suppose it applies to transmitters too. At at you know, at low frequency level, low signal levels, like in a transmit chain, but it's really a figure of merit for receivers. Like contesters use that third order intercept. If you have two rigs operating in a contest and they're high RF environment, you want to be able to listen to the guy you want to hear, and the guy transmitting at the bottom end of the band doesn't wipe you out, and that's what that's for. Anyway, I pass on 1 dB compression point as a rule of thumb. I'm kind of stuck here, Bill. I decided to go to RCA jacks. I bought a bunch of them, and I'm gonna start pulling off some of my BNC connectors off of my one-off boards and saving them and using RCA jacks to bolt together modules and to do modular circuit boards. So rather than having one big one, I'll have a bunch of small ones and have them mixed together with RCA jacks. Yeah, let me fire up my mail here and figure out what I sent you. I know I sent you something on the Enigma machine, the crack of the Enigma machine. Bill, M0HBR, KL7R.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That was the, I think what they call the bomb. They're rebuilding the bomb, the computer, the World War II computer that they built for decrypting versions, for decrypting operations. Yeah, I love all that stuff. That's that was real interesting. Thanks for sending that, Mike. I think I told you I live close to the Science Museum here in London, and they're involved in projects to build I think Babbage's difference engine, or the early, you know, mechanical computing machines that he designed. And they've succeeded in rebuilding one. And right in the middle of the Science Museum, as you go through, they have the workshop kind of on display. So you can see where they're working on it. I've never actually seen the guys doing the work, but I would like to be there one day when they're working at it. It's all very mechanical. You've got to get, you know, real precision. I think they're working with brass parts. It turns out to be this huge mechanical machine, and to do the calculations, they have to turn this crank, and man, out comes the logarithms. But amazing stuff. Yeah, those big old computers. I saw my son and I were in the Science Museum a while back. This is kind of homebrewish. It's in a kind of I don't know, unpleasant way, but I'll mention it. It's very geeky, kind of, well, there's a geek appeal to it, but we were in the medical section of the Science Museum, and they had a big display there about this guy here in the UK in the 1960s who homebrewed, get this, a dialysis machine. Man, it was a sad story. His wife needed the treatment, and it was, you know, they were having difficulty getting her to the site where to the hospital or wherever. So our intrepid hero there just got into the shack and I guess fired up the workbench, and he built one on his own, and they were using it. I think they had the actual device there in the museum. Man, I tell you, that's putting a lot of faith in your home brewing abilities there, Mike. enough of that, but I just thought I'd mention that one. But yeah, thanks for sending along the info on the big computer, and that just caused me to think of the homebrew dialysis machine. The RCA plugs versus the BNC. I mean, I've been shifting more to BNC. Now, the RCA plugs, we're not talking about phono plugs. We're talking about the little ones that typically go on the back of the speaker connections that usually come in the consumer electronics. That's what you're talking about, right, Mike? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's the phono plugs, RCA phono plugs. They're they're quarter inch, a little bit bigger. They have a shell. They were on the back of the original HW8. That type of phono plug. And that Enigma cracker, that was Bletchley Park, and apparently the end of this month they're going to have a grand opening, and I was I was wondering if you happen to go there, you could give us a report on that thing, Bill. There, over.
You know, I'm ashamed to say that I haven't made the pilgrimage up to Bletchley. I'll have to do that. Maybe my son and I'll go up. I think it might be a little too much for my 6-year-old daughter. And we'll see. Maybe my son and I'll take a ride up there. And we'll file a report for Solder Smoke. Who knows? Maybe we'll bring up the MP3 player and record from the site. That'd be fun. What else was I going to mention? Well, the plugs. Yeah, I my HW8 had the RCA plug, and somebody went in the opposite direction, and one of the only mods on my HW8 is they went to the BNC. I kind of like I like BNC plugs for most of the ham gear. I used to try to put the big coax plugs in there, but they were just such a pain in the neck to cut the hole for when you finally get to the end of the project. You know, you got to cut the hole in the cabinet to put the connectors in there. It was so easy to put in a BNC plug. You just you just find an appropriately sized drill bit. You put a hole in there, and then, you know, all of a sudden, presto, you've got the connector there. It's always, you know, you're always at that mad dash at the end of the project. You want to get it done, and you've got this frustrating kind of metal work getting the right size hole to put the coax connector in there. The old coax connectors were a pain in the neck too, because then you had to put the 4 little holes for the little screws, and you have to find the little appropriately sized screw and bolt and nut to get it in there. Oh man, that's why one of the reasons I went to BNC, and I understand the electrical characteristics are better. So why are you going away from BNC, Mike? Is it just is it just easier for your applications there with the RCA plugs?
Don't get me wrong, M0HBR, TL7R, all my rigs have BNC, and I value BNCs, and they're like $5 a piece, but I value I like them, I use them, I enjoy BNC is good, but I can't afford them. I'm running out, and so what I'm thinking of doing is salvaging or scavenging BNC connectors that I've put on one-off boards and replacing them with RCA jacks, which I can get, you know, eight for $3 or something like that at Radio Shack. And it costs $5 for one of the BNC connectors. So that's what I'm doing. This is an economic thing. No, I all of my QRP rigs have BNC connectors, and my HF rigs have UHF to BNC adapters. No, that's, I like BNCs. I just can't afford to have them on all of my my one-off boards. But what one fellow out there did a design, and his idea was to I forget the name of this thing. I just looked it up for somebody. But he did a thing where he put like a mixer in an Altoids tin, then he put an audio amp in an Altoids tin, and he put a RF preamp, and you know, all these different modules in an individual Altoids tin, and he had the design was to have RCA connectors between them, and I thought that was a cool thing. I noticed that I'm using a lot of circuit board for one-off projects, and it would be nice, I was thinking, to make smaller boards as modules, and I thought for those modules I'd use the RCA jacks, which are less expensive, and interconnect them with some 174. But no, I like BNC there, over.
Yeah, I know what you mean. They are expensive. Somewhere along the line, I picked up a batch of old parts, I think on one of these eBay, buy a box of old parts, and a whole bunch of these old BNC connectors came in. So I've got them here. Let me know if you run into a serious BNC deficit, but it sounds like your RCA plug solution works for your purposes. Yeah, yeah, sure. Well, I'm terrible about using the wrong kind of plug for the wrong kind of purpose. I've especially on power connectors. I mean, I know there's all kinds of debate on the right what kind of plugs you should use to get the 12 volts into the rig, but I usually end up using what whatever's available, and often it works, but it's the wrong kind of plug. Like I've got some of the rigs here where the power goes in through a quarter, you know, one of these quarter inch phono plugs. I think the phone or phono plugs, the, you know, the kind that in the old movies the operator used to take the plug out and plug it in there, the old headphone jack kind of thing, you know, quarter inch. The problem is though that, you know, you inevitably hit the center tip to the chassis or the ground connector on the way in, and if you've got your 12-volt source hooked up to it, you blow the fuses as you plug or unplug the power source. So once you get it in there, then it's okay, but you usually end up blowing fuses on the way in and the way out, so it's definitely the wrong kind of plug. But these are the things you do, Mike, if you're home brewing in some of the places that that I've home brewed. You have a good excuse if you're out in the Azores, 900 miles off the coast. I think you should get special dispensation and be allowed to do goofy homebrewing things like that. KL7R M0HBR.
All right, Bill. KL7R back. You were speaking of homebrewing. I've been out in the bush, and I've heard stories of guys sawing four-cylinder engines in half to save gas mileage to make it a two-cylinder engine. You do what you got to do, I guess. Let's see. Last thing going on for me that I can think of, like I say, I'm just really scattered here. So, is I did get back those 10.140 crystals from Christian there, DL6JAN, and that only took just 5 or 6 days from Germany. So, pretty cool stuff. I've sent just a couple things to Europe, and it doesn't seem to be much slower than going to the East Coast there, Bill. I don't have a lot more unless you've got some news. I see we've got some pretty good mail that's coming here recently. There, you want to mention some of them there, Bill? M0HBR, KL7R.
Yes, indeed, Mike. It's time for Sottle Smoke Mailbag. Let's see. We did get we get great mail here, and we really appreciate all of it. I hope I mention everybody here. I'm sorry if I miss a few. We'll probably try to pick them up next week. But we got a nice note from John, KC2IGJ, who told us that he's enjoying Solder Smoke. John, G4GOY, wrote in and made a nice comment, not so much about Solder Smoke, but about my video on YouTube about the DSB rig. It's Solder Smoke related because I've been droning on about this rig now for months, so I finally decided to put together a video, and I posted it up on YouTube, and John saw it. It's there. If you go to YouTube and you search for ham radio or homebrew or double sideband or something like that, you'll find it. Also, I have a link. The easiest way to do it is there's a link on the video page of my www.gadgeteer.us website, and you'll find a link, and it'll take you to the video. It's the production values are well, let's say in the amateur class, Mike. But the focus is off, and it was all just pretty much slapped together. But I think it lets people see what the rig looks like. Dennis Gaskill sent us a very nice note saying he likes the show, and he made a suggestion that we are taking to heart. We won't say much more about it, but we have something in the works in response to Dennis's suggestion. He suggested that we consider guest speakers or guests for the Solder Smoke program. We have one in the works that we think will be of great interest to the solder melting community, and we'll leave it at that. Stay tuned, Solder Smoke fans. We got another nice email from Gary Beach down under, and he and Mike corresponded about the QRSS crystals from Germany. And finally, on Sutter Smoke Mailbag tonight, unless you have another one, Mike, but we're pleased to learn that you have a listener up there in Alaska. Not only is the show being generated from Alaska, but John, WL7M, is listening from that great state, and glad to hear you're tuning in from Alaska, John. So anyway, that concludes this week's edition of Solder Smoke Mailbag. Unless there's any other mail that you wanted to mention, Mike, we get quite a bit on different email accounts, and so I might have missed one. But let me know, Mike. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention in regards to the mail? Go ahead.
No. I did, while you were on, I did go to YouTube, and if you search for Double Sideband, your HBR Productions video, I haven't seen it yet, so I'll do that after we're done, pops up there. I'm really really kind of jazzed about your last email. It'd be interesting to see what happens with that there, Bill. Well, that's about it for me. I'll try to be a little more organized next time. Have a good week there, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Okay, Mike, real good. Well, no, you're always organized. You've got so many different things going on, and always interesting to hear about them. Let's see. One other thing I want to mention that might be of interest. I think you'll be interested in this. I just caught it this morning before we got on, but there's an article with an interesting title by an interesting guy. It's called Why Johnny Can't Code, and it's about disappearance of the basic coding language from computers, and how the loss or the disappearance of this language is affecting kind of elementary school level education. I'm sure that the more digitally inclined listeners will be interested in it. It's on the website called Slate, S-L-A-T-E, and any kind of Google search on this will get you there. It was featured on Slashdot, and that'll get you there too. But I found the article interesting. There's some homebrew related discussions, some discussion of basic stamp chips, and some actual discussion of hardware homebrewing in connection with software and coding. So I know that'll be of interest to many people, and I recommend it. The article was fun. All right, that's it. I guess time to wrap it up. It's getting late up there in Juneau. Billy is awake, and he's here with me now, and time to get him some cereal. So that's usually the time to wrap it up for Solder Smoke. We really like to get mail. Anybody who wants to send in comments, you can send it to n2cqr@arrl.net or any other addresses mentioned in our intro or at the end of the segment. And thanks, Mike. Have a good evening, and we'll talk again real soon here on Solder Smoke, KL7R, M0HBR3.